Morning to you. Are you hearing me loud and clear?
Yes, good morning to you, Kerry.
Excellent. Brilliant work. There we are. Now, first question I need to ask, because I didn't think to check this with you first up, is where are we actually calling you? Which part of the world do we find you in?
Well, I'm actually in a market town called Denby up in North Wales.
Denby. Ah, well, now we know Denby. Yeah, we know Denby pretty well. And how is your weather up there this morning?
It's fine, actually. There's a few white clouds about, but mainly blue sky and it's dry.
There we are. You see, I mean, it's the same down here in Cardiff, and we all sound rather surprised about it, really. But we shouldn't be, because, heck, we're getting through May a bit sharpish. Thank you so much for joining me this morning on the programme. And we're going to be talking about your book, Running on the Spectrum. I have told our lovely listeners a little bit about the details behind the twists and turns of the book. But please, first up, let's hear a little bit about yourself. And we've also explored the fact that, yes, also in civilian life, know you as Chris, but written under the title Jean Moran. So please tell us more.
Well, I was born in Holywell, grew up in Holywell.
Yeah.
My mother was born there as well. And my father was actually born in Cardiff, down your neck of the
woods. Can't fault that.
Strong Catholic family, hence the name Jean, which is my first name, Eugene.
Yes.
And strangely, I always said if ever I became famous or did something interesting, I would use Jean, even though throughout my life I've been called Chris.
Right, okay. I'm sure that makes sense somewhere along the line, yeah, absolutely.
It does. So, born in my parents' house, the front bedroom, attended the local Catholic primary school, which, although I was mischievous, I did well academically. Missed the opportunity to go to grammar school because the year of my transition, it changed to the comprehensive education system.
Right, right.
So I attended the high school in Holywell.
Mm-hmm.
A few incidents on the first day actually led to me being accepted by the roles of the school, shall we say.
Mm-hmm.
And when I went into my year 9, I found myself being put into the lower tiers. I would be taking what would be called the lower tier GCSEs at the moment, rather than the O levels that were around at the time. I was told I could turn this around in year 9, which I did by gaining good results, I thought. And then it all went wrong, really, for school for me. Mm. They didn't put me back into what would have been O-level systems. And I didn't make it to the end of my year 11.
Ah, I see. So a difficult schooling then. Was it that sort of feeling of needing to make your mark then that spurred you on?
Well, it was in a way. I went on to the College of Further Education that was close by.
Yeah.
Having left school with only one O level in art.
Mm-hmm.
I think something Rodney Troxell and I have in common.
Yes.
Wasn't sure what to do there. I was interested in art, obviously, so I thought I might do an art foundation course. My father had been a joiner, so I thought I might do something about the line, but I realised I needed to get myself some academic qualifications.
Right, yes.
Looked through the prospectus, found I was still at a crossroads, if you like, and realised that if I put the hours in, I could possibly do all three
mm-hmm.
courses. So I got an appointment with the principal, explained that it worked on the timetable as long as I did a couple of long days, which were actually from 9 till 8:30 on Tuesday and Thursday.
Right.
And 12 months later, found that I had a bunch of O-levels. I had my first year foundation course in art completed and my first year course as a joiner completed.
Right.
So I went back the next year, of course, completed my art foundation course, completed my joinery course, and also took some A-levels, which I took in just one year. So somehow I managed to go from leaving school with basically nothing academically to being 18 and having O-levels, A-levels, and a couple full-time foundation courses.
Which is no mean feat whatsoever.
So it meant putting the hours in.
Well,
but,
truly.
It did underline the fact that somehow school had failed me.
Right, right.
And this led to a chat with my joinery teacher, who basically suggested, well, if you know the system and you know what's wrong with the system, why don't you become a teacher?
Mm.
And it was that simple conversation.
Right.
Changed my direction completely.
I see. So that absolutely lays the foundation, I am sure, then, for the book Running on the Spectrum, because quite obviously, as we said, you, through your own hard work, clawed your way back to getting the results that you needed, the qualifications that you needed, and it was that light bulb moment from that chat, obviously, that made you realise that, yeah, absolutely, why don't we get involved in the system and try and fix it?
Yes, it was.
So where did you sort of take your career teaching wise from then? Did you stay in North Wales?
Well, I wanted to stay in a Welsh college.
Yeah.
So I went to Bangor.
Yes.
A very popular university town.
Absolutely.
And also it meant that I could keep the Welsh atmosphere, the Welsh influence that I wanted to keep in my life.
Yes.
And spent 3 years there training, but then did go over the border for my first teaching post.
Okay.
I went over to Birkenhead, just a few miles
not
out
too
over
far.
The border.
Yeah, not too far.
Not too far.
Yeah, yeah.
And started off there in a boys' independent college.
Excellent, yeah.
Quite a bit away from where I originally thought I was going to teach when I went in at 18, because then I saw myself in special education at some stage.
Right.
Stayed there for a few years and then made the swing back to where I think I should have been, which was I went in to work for a private company teaching students from all over England and Wales, about 50 of them put together in North Wales, and probably the only thing they all had in common was that their local authorities said they should not be on any of their school sites.
Right.
So they paid a considerable amount of money to have them in North Wales at a private school.
So clearly there's a theme developing here, which I'm sure probably you're going to tell me is pretty much then the genesis of the book that you've written, because this whole aspect of needing to build relationships with students, and particularly some that maybe, as we said, who have already in their eyes been failed by the educational system.
Yes, the school is autobiographical in nature.
Yeah.
The book is autobiographical in nature.
Yeah.
And I can certainly take many parallels with my own life, my own teaching career through the actual students, but also through the teacher, the main character.
Understood. Yeah. So then, how long ago did you actually make a start on putting the book together? And indeed, when did you first think to yourself, this is a great idea for a book? And when did you sort of sit down and make a start?
Well, I never saw myself as a youngster writing a book. One of the things I discovered at college was that I had dyslexia. Which I now appreciate why that was in my life and how the effect it's had.
Yes.
Because languages were always difficult for me. So that prevented me from thinking, shall we say, as a 15 or 16 year old, yes, I'll write a book.
Yeah.
But I did love storytelling. My father was a great reader, but he was also a great storyteller. Usually he would put something humorous or funny in the story, or the climax of it would be. So I think although I didn't have any love for reading as such, but I did have a great love for storytelling.
Yes.
Hearing stories, telling them, being involved in whatever. It was actually many years later when my father was poorly in Hollywood. I used to travel from Denby through to him to see him in the evenings. And spent some nights in the hospital with him.
Yes.
Before he passed away. And we changed our roles because I told him stories then. I made up stories myself.
Yes, you became the storyteller.
And that was really the start of it, because what happened in the sort of 45 years in between when our roles were reversed was because IT came on the scene.
Yes, yes.
Which meant I could have a laptop, which meant that I could have spell checks and grammar checks and all these things that I've struggled with through my teaching career, really.
Yes.
Because obviously there's a lot of spelling and writing and those sort of things involved with being a teacher.
Oh, yes.
But that meant that I could actually put something down. So that was where I initiated the idea, yes, I might write a book.
Right.
It was basically in hospital with my father.
There we are. So running on the spectrum, as I say, I've mentioned to our lovely listeners a little bit about the background, but please, in your own words, in a couple of minutes, just give people a little bit of a rundown and sort of set the scene for the book. I mean, clearly, we don't want you to give too much away about it, but set the scene for us.
Well, it tells the story of a seasoned teacher, Tom Malalou. He arrives at a special school in North Wales to become a secondary teacher there. And he found himself overwhelmed initially by the behaviour of some of the students and realises that the only way to make any progress with them is to build a relationship with them first. So building the relationship had to come first, mm-hmm. and his teaching had to come second.
Right, right.
He has a strong interest in running and outdoor pursuits, etc. Loves the mountains of North Wales and the surrounding Clwyd Hills up here.
Yes.
And he uses them to develop this relationship, to form strong bonds with many of the students, but one in particular, one of the older students, a girl called Eve.
Yes.
She's quieter than the others and loves running. She loved running before Tom even arrived at school and goes off by herself, he discovers, but never seems to tire. So he notices her potential and changes tack, so his academic calendar, as he would have had, suddenly becomes a running fixtures calendar as he helps Eve and other students to develop into remarkable athletes, really.
Yes, yes. So is it fair to say that there is a big part of you in this story, and indeed was there somebody perhaps in your teaching career that this young woman was modelled on?
Not an individual as such. There's snippets of lots of people.
Yes.
In the storyline itself, amongst, I suppose, the staff and the family and friends and
right.
those people in Tom's own life, as the story unfolds, and little bits of different shootings in them. But it's not based on any particular school
Understood.
Or any location or any
Understood.
Students, etc.
Right, right. And so how long did it take you, really, from picking up your pen, so to speak, and jotting that first word down, or indeed, as we said, putting it onto the laptop, to being in a situation where you thought, yep, that's it, that's done?
Well, at a time period, it has been years.
Right.
But that's because I wrote a little bit and then left it for
yes.
a year or so,
okay.
and then went back and wrote a bit more. I don't really have a style of writing,
mm-hmm.
or a routine would be maybe a better word, a routine of writing.
No.
I just put bits down as they came to me. That was it, really.
So it's taken, as you say, it's taken a few years, and I mean, clearly, in a way, you weren't in a rush. There was no sort of time frame, presumably, in the back of your mind. But you obviously had confidence, though, that it was a story that people would want to read and would want to hear about.
Well, yes. When I gave the idea of the story to friends, family or friends, the initial idea,
mm-hmm.
and I only did that with a few, they thought, oh, that's a great idea, do it. So I got the broad storyline, thought about my locations, thought about the characters, and then I broke it down into chapters.
Yes.
As I said, I love stories, but not reading because of dyslexia, I discovered. So my stories came from television and films. And I think that's what led me to do the style of book I did.
Right.
Because the book is like a television series, and the chapters are different programs that are completing in their own sense, if that makes sense.
And obviously, I must ask the question, I mean, obviously, the outdoor pursuits angle of it all, I mean, living in such a beautiful part of the world in North Wales, where you have such a wonderful open countryside and many hills and mountains, has running really been something that has, you know, been in your life as well?
Yes, I only ran for fun as such, but I have entered things like mountain marathons.
Yes,
and
yes.
I did a half marathon runs and these sort of things all the years.
Right.
In fact, the first race I ever did was a half marathon, and that was when I was about 14.
So obviously, you were able then to use your own experiences then in the book, really, weren't you? Because that obviously means that all of the passion about running for Eve, in a way, you could use some of your own experiences and translate that into her experiences.
Yes, I mean, the book is very difficult to describe, really, in the type of book it is.
Yeah.
I think the final conclusion has been that it's humour, like a comedy drama, actually.
Right.
But through the book, the theme of running is there, and walking the mountains of North Wales, etc.
Yes, yeah.
That is very strong within the book, hence the title, Running on the Spectrum.
Mm-hmm. So, the book has now been published?
Yes, Candy Jar Books, again, in Cardiff, have been very, very supportive. It's printed, or the initial copies are printed. And they're just fine-tuning a few things at the moment. One being a website, etc.
Right.
For myself.
Okay. But I know, obviously, from past experience, what a great bunch of people that they are with regards to the work that they do. And they do such great work as well with new authors, first-time authors, writers in general, obviously, whether people are writing fiction or non-fiction. And I think you're in very, very, very safe hands indeed. Has it given you the appetite for more writing?
Yes, very much so. I have two more storylines in mind. Not, again, about school and running as such. One a bit more historical, which I think will work very, very well. And one a crime one.
One
of the problems I found with publishing was that so many of the publishers these days just want crime.
Yeah, yes, fair point. It is a fair point. I mean, it just seems to be the thing that sells, doesn't it?
It does. Or certainly the thing that is sought.
Yes, yes. Well, there we are. It all sounds to me, though, as though you've got your thoughts and your plans mapped out. Time is, once again, inevitably beating us, as it always does in these phone conversations. So let me just say, Chris, thank you so much for joining me this morning to talk about your book, Running on the Spectrum, which is published by Candy Jar. And if people want to maybe go on the website for Candy Jar, they'll no doubt find it there. And obviously, sounds like a really interesting thing. Fingers crossed, we'll be able to talk again very soon with a bit more information then on some of your new projects.
Yes, that would be excellent. Thank you very much for welcoming me this morning.
Brilliant. Well, thank you so much, as I say, for joining me, Chris. And as we say, the book is Running on the Spectrum. Jean Moran is the official author's title on it. And sounds like it could be very interesting. So, Chris, thank you for your time and look forward to catching up with you again very soon.